Welcome into another episode of the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. My name is Jacob Rudner, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Peter Flaherty. And Peter, we have another great week of college baseball on our hands here. We're always looking forward to talking about what's upcoming. We also love to talk about what has occurred, and we have our first full week of college baseball under our belts. Teams played midweek games for the first time this season, in addition to a full weekend slate. A couple teams had five-game weeks. Others, like Oklahoma State, played just two times. Early season weather always sucks, and that was certainly a factor this week. But before we get into anything past or present, Peter, do tell me how you're doing and some thoughts from week two.
Doing great. I'm kind of questioning my own durability here. Week one, I had the neurovirus, no TMI needed. Everyone knows what that whole deal's about. And then week two, as you can hear by my annoying voice, I got some other virus sinus infection. So I'm questioning my own durability, but playing hurt, powering through. And another great week. The MTEs, multi-team events, they always provide a lot of excitement and cool out-of-conference matchups. You usually see teams playing others that don't usually play each other during the season, down at neutral sites and cool ballparks. We saw it this weekend with a lot of good games. We'll see it again this weekend. I am kind of bummed, as we'll get into later, that Tennessee and Texas A&M are not playing each other at the College Baseball Series or Astros Foundation College Classic in Houston, whatever the title is of the event. But yeah, great week in week two, and you know, we'll keep this thing rolling. I have a feeling we'll say it was another great week and about 12 more times this year. So still just enjoying the initial high that we have baseball to watch.
Yeah, and I think one thing that is particularly interesting, is what we'll call it, is the top 25. We, every single week, are tasked with ranking who we believe to be the top 25 teams in college baseball. And for those of you who don't know, that is a collaborative process at BA. It's not just Peter and I, but he and I have probably what I would call the main voices in the conversation. They're our rankings. And for the first time this season, I think we can confidently say that we have drummed up, Peter, quite a bit of disagreement, especially from people who are out in the beautiful city of Norman, Oklahoma. We did not rank Oklahoma this week after a fantastic week. Let's be very upfront and honest. Oklahoma was excellent. They beat two top 10 teams in their first full week of the season. We went with Alabama at number 25. We did not yet rank Oklahoma. And so we're going to start the pod with this. Why? What led to the decision? What were some of the things that were going through our mind? And we kind of talked about this last week too, the weights of things that we consider when it comes to putting together the top 25. So, you know, projection from what we thought about a team before the season, questions that we still have that weigh in, and how much weight we're really putting on early season results. So I'm going to kick it over to you, Peter, to give your reasoning first and talk to me a little bit about how we kind of arrived at the back end of the 25 that we did. And then I will share some thoughts as well.
Yeah. I was going to say, please fill in and interject as I go along, because as you said, it is a collaborative process, but Oklahoma had an excellent week, as good a week as you can have. They played really well down in Round Rock. They started off with a one run win over Minnesota, and then finish it off with a pair of big time wins over Oregon State and Virginia. And I think, at least speaking to the process and kind of where we're at and how we landed on the top 25, it's a blend of a whole lot of things. And I think early on in the season, you know, you got to be, I think, cautious and wary not to get too carried away with, you know, one good weekend or one good series win, because then you end up with like this revolving door of top 25 teams, especially towards the back end, where you're just kind of like taking teams in, taking teams out. So, I mean, and we'll talk about it later with NC State, who had I'd say on one end of the spectrum, you had an Oklahoma week, and then the other, you had an NC State week. And we'll talk about that as well. But I mean, yeah, they had an outstanding week. They're very, very close and right there to breaking down the door to entering the top 25. And I mean, if they take care of business again this week against Texas Southern and Cal State Northridge, that's setting up to be another potentially 4 or 5 win week. That's going to put them in a very, very good spot. And they're going to be another team that we take a serious look at come Sunday night.
Right. And I think one thing that is important to reiterate, and we said this last week as well, is just it's so early in the season that putting an extraordinary amount of weight on 1 week is challenging. And this is not to say, by the way, that we didn't think Oklahoma showed a lot in its previous week. They, like Peter just said, they did really great. They beat good teams that we view in really high regard. We have voiced on this podcast and in some of our reporting online that we had questions, not necessarily concerns, but just questions about Oklahoma's offense. And that certainly played a factor in my mind as well. It was one of those things for me, at least, where I wanted to see them do more. And as you just said, with the schedule that they have upcoming and what they already have done so far this season, that's probably your team 26 for us. And we do rank out, we don't publish these, but we do rank out teams from 26 to 30, plus a couple others that we're going to need to keep an eye on. And Oklahoma is one of those teams. So what I would say to those who are distraught about Oklahoma not being in the rankings is this: it's super early. And that is a team that is exceptionally close and easily could have been in the rankings this week. And I would say, like Peter said, you know, with a good week next week, that is a team that we view as immediately rankable and probably even beyond number 25. We're looking at a team that with a good week probably gets a pretty nice number next to its name.
Yeah. I mean, like, should they take care of business this week, 4 or 5 wins? I mean, it's going to take care of itself.
Exactly. And I also think one thing worth discussing, and I'll throw it back to you here, is why we like Alabama. And a lot of people correctly can make the same argument. Well, it's early, Peter and Jacob, why would you rank a team like Alabama over a team like Oklahoma? Why don't you give me a little bit about what went through your mind, and I'll do the same on what put the Crimson Tide in the 25 for this week.
Yeah, kind of an eye roll inducing pun here, but the Tide's rolling right now. They had a really, really impressive 5-0 week, headlined by sweeping the Jacks College Baseball Classic, shut out then number 14 NC State 4-0, then erased a 10-run deficit against Ohio State. Ohio State was honestly, just from a sheer opponent resume, I guess, standpoint, probably the least impressive win of the weekend. They also opened it up with a 9-2 win over a Coastal team that's also been floated around in the top 25 discussion, kind of probably more in that 30 to 35-ish range than 25 to 30, but another team that's right there, a team we view as a likely tournament team. But the offense is stacked, led by shortstop Justin LeBron. God bless. Justin LeBron having an outstanding start to the season. He's a top-of-the-class name for the 2026 draft. They've also gotten contributions from transfer Bryce Fowler from Southern Miss. Will Hodo had a huge 3-run walk-off blast against Ohio State. The offense is clicking, and then it doesn't stop there. I mean, sophomore Riley Quick is kind of coming into his own. He entered the season as a buzzy name on the mound. Huge arm strength guy. Strikes were a little bit of an issue. He's competing around the zone on a more consistent basis this year and flashing that big-time stuff. And it's just a very well-rounded group led by an equally excellent coach and Coach Vaughn, who's just done a magnificent job since taking over. So, I mean, they're firing on all cylinders. They have a light week again this week with Jacksonville State and then a series against North Dakota State at home. So 5-0 week, they were a team that was also kind of right on the 25 line, even heading into last week, and they broke down that door, so to speak.
And one thing I will add, because I would just be reiterating exactly what you just said, is that this is probably the spot where we get into how much BA's poll weights what we believe to be what we'll just call future projection, what we think a team can kind of grow into over the course of the season. And one thing, as we already pointed out with Oklahoma, we just want to see more with the offense. And that was a question that we had going into the season. We thought Alabama really answered that question. And so, again, if this was in week five, I don't actually think there would be much debate. I think that it would be a pretty clear-cut decision to rank Oklahoma. And if we had to choose between Oklahoma and Alabama, it still would have been the Sooners 5 weeks from now. But what I would tell people is that this early on in the season, we are still putting a decent amount of weight on just what our eyes are telling us and what we think a team can be. So that is something that will continue to kind of be evolving as the season goes on, and the weight of something like that will obviously change. But this early, when we're not necessarily trying to put too much stock in a week one or week two result, that was kind of what we landed on. And I'll reiterate just one more time before we move on here, Oklahoma is probably in that pole position to jump into the rankings with a good week here, which we think they're very capable of.
Yeah, and like you said, not just jump in, like take a pretty strong spot in it as well.
Exactly. Let's move forward here and talk about what I think is one of the more exciting topics for this upcoming week, and that is the number one spot in our top 25. After week two, we decided to keep Texas A&M there, and just to explain that briefly on all of our behalf, on the behalf of BA, because this was pretty much where everybody agreed, one loss, especially on a Sunday, is not enough to change our opinion of a team that we heard overwhelming positive feedback on throughout the preseason. And that came from scouts, that came from teams that would have to play Texas A&M. You know, it was right around 80% of the 50 coaches who Baseball America polled in the preseason picked Texas A&M as their predicted national championship winner. And for us, one loss to Cal Poly was not going to be enough to change that opinion, and it didn't. So we left them in that number one spot. However, we did move Tennessee from number three to number two. And I think had we moved Tennessee from number three to number one, we wouldn't have gotten a whole lot of resistance. And so this week, to me, is going to be reasonably pivotal in trying to determine who is the number one team after two full weeks of the season. Let me hear your thoughts on that. And then let's hold off on talking about some of the injuries and things with Texas A&M. Right now, we're going to get into that in a little more depth in a second.
Yeah, like we'll dive into the injuries in a bit, but as far as number one goes, it was relatively, it wasn't even really a discussion to keep A&M at one. I mean, they, as you said, they came into the season as the unanimous top team in college baseball. They had a one run loss on a Sunday to Cal Poly. I mean, you can't move them off the number one spot just for a loss like that. And I think when heading into this week, it's certainly a very pivotal week, I think, for both teams. If you're just looking at the number one ranking spot, they each have the same slate of games, albeit on different days, at the Astros Foundation College Classic. And I cannot believe that Tennessee and A&M are not playing each other. I know that they want to avoid that because Texas A&M goes to Lindsey Nelson Stadium, I think, in early April. So they don't want to play each other early on, but man, I just feel so robbed of what would have been such a great game, but we'll wait a little over a month for it. But I mean, Tennessee is playing like the best team in the country right now. I know if you look at their schedule, it's not necessarily world beaters, but they're doing what they should against those teams. They dismantled Hofstra. They put up a football score against UNC Asheville, scoring 29 runs. They handled a really quality Stanford team who they lost a game to last year. And it's on both sides of the baseball. The lineup is just, not only is their lineup nine guys deep, it's like 12, 13 deep that you can feel confident sticking in the box in a big spot. I mean, we've seen it with Levi Clark, who has twice hit huge pinch hit home runs, the biggest one being his game winning grand slam on Saturday. And then on the mound, everyone is throwing the ball really, really well. Liam Doyle has one of the best fastballs in this year's draft class. I think it's two starts, but 25 Ks to one walk and 10 and a third innings. I think the heater in and of itself is generating a whiff rate of around 70%, which is just nutty. And that goes, you know, down the entire pitching staff. So, I mean, they're firing all cylinders right now. Very, very excited to see how they look this weekend down at Minute Maid Park, especially that Friday matchup against Oklahoma State.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting that they don't get to play each other, but we may get the next best thing Each team does face the same slate of three teams throughout that weekend in Houston, which will be an interesting way to kind of compare them. For Texas A&M, they face Texas State in the midweek. Obviously, that game is going to be different than what Tennessee is facing, followed by a Friday matchup against Arizona, Saturday against number 16 Oklahoma State, and Sunday against Rice, whereas the Volunteers will face North Alabama in the midweek open with number 16 Oklahoma State, Rice on Saturday, and Arizona on Sunday. So a pretty even comparison as far as that matchup goes. And I'll agree, I think Tennessee is doing everything it needs to do to look like the number one team in the country. Its offense is humming. They do an excellent job, not just leaning on their power, which they obviously have plenty of in the tank, but this is a team that does a very good job of just moving itself over station to station. The fundamentals of this group are very good. And as you mentioned, they have a guy in Liam Doyle who's looking like, at least so far against, you know, reasonably easy competition, a pure, you know, very real Friday night guy, which I think is critical in terms of having long-term success. And of course, Texas A&M has that guy too, Ryan Prager, different profile, but still, you know, is somebody who you can rely on to be that lockdown Friday night guy. And so both teams have the ingredients here. It's just, it's starting to look a lot closer, I think, than maybe we anticipated before the season in terms of deciding who should be atop that list.
Yeah. And not to divert here into an Astros Foundation College Classic discussion, but big time weekend potentially ahead for Arizona. They bounced back really nicely from its tough showing at Globe Life. They had a 4-0 week that was capped off with a 3-game sweep of a San Diego team who, even though its record might not show it at 0-7, I think that they're way, way better than that. And Arizona's figured it out, especially on the mound. And that personnel group offensively led by Brandon Summerhill, Mason White swinging the bat really well, Maddox Mialakis, Aaron Walton. That's a pretty strong quartet. Easton Brayfogle's come on and looks the part of a breakout sophomore. And like I said, they're kind of figuring out where everyone fits best on the mound. So they got a real chance to make some noise this weekend. They play number one Texas A&M, top 15 team in Mississippi State, and they close it out with number two Tennessee. So, I mean, that's as formidable a gauntlet as you can have, I think, at this point in the season. But man, if they take a couple, that's a big time weekend for the Cats.
And on the same vein, before we, you know, move on here, this is kind of a same test type week for Oklahoma State. This is going to be a big week for a team that hasn't exactly gotten off to the start that I'm sure it wanted. The Cowboys are 2-3 so far. They were only able to play two games last week. They lost to Texas State in a neutral site midweek game, and then weather prevented them from playing all but one game against UT Arlington over the weekend. They played another on Monday, and they moved up in the rankings for us because, you know, as we wrote, really hard week to judge, not really enough games to go off of. This week, we won't have that problem. They play Abilene Christian in the midweek and then face number two Tennessee, number one Texas A&M, and number 15 Mississippi State over the course of the weekend. We are going to learn what Oklahoma State, you know, could be this weekend. I think if you are the Cowboys, to feel comfortable that you're going to stay in the rankings with a losing record going into the week, you probably got to take at least two of three, you know, from three ranked matchups over the weekend to show that that's a group that you belong in. And so that will be interesting to follow as well. Let's shift our attention to those Texas A&M injuries that we mentioned, because one big factor in this is going to be, does Texas A&M have the firepower to continuously prove that it deserves to be in the number one spot? I think that they have a good chance to, but when you lose Gavin Grahovic, the SEC Freshman of the Year in 2024, who was viewed as kind of one of those, you know, cornerstone pieces of your roster for the rest of the year, he suffered a torn left labrum. That's a really big deal. And I'll also add Caden Sorrell, who's somebody who can maybe step in at third base a little bit, is also expected to miss another couple weeks here. So this is an A&M team that's missing some really important bats at this point.
Yeah, one of the things that we had agreed on and had heard from so many people throughout the fall and winter was how deep this Texas A&M team is. And that still holds true, but man, that depth is being tested way earlier than expected and in way bigger ways than I think anyone could have ever anticipated. They already dealt a serious blow when Shane Sadeo was ruled out for the season. a guy who probably would have slotted in that weekend rotation or certainly was in consideration to do so. Caden Sorrell is nursing a hamstring injury. He's on the shelf for another few weeks. And then yesterday was arguably the biggest blow when Grahovic, it was announced that he'd be getting shoulder surgery, be out for 25. Big time middle of the order bat, made a massive impact as a freshman, was the 2024 SEC Freshman of the Year, 23 homers, can drive the baseball to all fields. That's a guy that, you know, is borderline irreplaceable. I think that, you know, there are going to need to be at least, excuse me, one guy or a couple of guys who are going to have to put on their big boy pants and step up here a little bit. But I still like the Aggies a lot. I think, you know, we could talk about the bad, but, you know, they are going to get Caden Sorrell back at some point. The pitching staff, especially its weekend rotation of the three lefties with Ryan Prager, Justin Lampkin, and Miles Patton has been exceptional. You know, your offense, whenever it can be led by a guy like Jace LaViolette, potential number one overall pick, he's inevitably going to get rolling. So, tough go of it, but like we said, to kind of circle back on their depth, they've just got a bevy of options, and you know, they're going to rely on a couple of guys to step up. Like Terrence Keel the second has already stepped up, in the wake of Caden Sorrell being banged up. So, we'll see what they do to replace Grahovic or kind of replace him in the aggregate with a couple of guys, but no, they're playing really good baseball.
It's interesting because one thing, like you mentioned, that we were so bullish on when it came to this Texas A&M team was just the amount of talent that they had at their disposal. And one thing that we actually distinctly talked about before the season started was, say somebody does get hurt on this Texas A&M team and is going to miss a little bit of time, what is the replacement depth capable of doing? And now we're going to learn that. So this, like Peter said, is a really good Texas A&M team. They have lots of talent beyond the guys who were initially in their starting nine. Now we're just going to learn exactly what that looks like. And again, whether or not it's good enough to stay ahead of a very good Tennessee team. Let's talk about a team in the top 25 that is kind of in a weird spot too. You know, we mentioned Oklahoma State kind of in this, you really got to prove it mode. I think that there are a couple other teams that you could make that argument about. None more prominent to me at the moment than Virginia. You obviously Duke is in that conversation, but Virginia still a top 10 team. For those of you who are watching this on YouTube, you can see at the bottom of the screen, you got the ticker of the top 25. For those of you who are not, we have Virginia at number 8 right now. They started the season at number 5. They've moved down in both polls. Peter, not necessarily what we expected from Virginia. You haven't seen Evan Blanco yet, which is a big deal. But I think just kind of generally speaking here, kind of a tough spot. This is a team that needs to prove itself and do some winning.
Yeah, and they're actually throwing the ball really, really well outside of a couple of spotty appearances on the mound, but especially the rotation. You know, they've been excellent to start the year, especially freshman Thomas Valencius. He's kind of been a revelation and looks like he could be that next great UVA arm. Jay Woolfolk has been more effective this spring. And yeah, like I said, on the mound, outside of a couple dud appearances, they've been throwing the ball really well. So I'm kind of just waiting on, and I think everyone is, their offense to get going. Coming into this year, the story with UVA was, oh, the offense. And they still boast a really impressive personnel group. Henry Godbout and Eric Becker and Aiden Teal are off to strong starts. But I think it's a when and not an if. Guys like Harrison Didowick, Chris Arroyo, and Henry Ford really get going because they're off to slower starts. You know, like we've harped on so much, the weather's been crummy. It's cold. It's raw, rainy. You know, I'm not baking in excuses for 2 for 22, 2 for 24 stretches, but it is a little bit more difficult to hit and you're still getting your eyes hot in the box. And all three of those guys are really talented players. So like I said, I think it's a when, not an if, this UVA offense gets going, and when it does and when they're all clicking, it's one of the units I think I'm more bullish on in the country. I mean, that is going to look like an absolute freight train. when that whole deal is going. So tough week. I think it was an uninspiring week. They had that game against Oklahoma on Sunday. It slipped away in extra innings. They snuck by a Minnesota team that was the, I think, clear underdog, to put it kindly, of that group in Round Rock. And then a bad fifth inning did him in on Friday against Oregon State. So I think they've got a chance to get into rhythm here. They play VMI later today, and then they've got a series with Dartmouth this weekend. So, I think they'll get going. I'm really not at all concerned, especially with how they're throwing the ball. And getting Evan Blanco back is only going to provide a massive boost. And we heard really positive things about him in the fall. So I'm not really close to pushing the panic button with UVA.
And I think that that's evidenced by the fact that we still do have them eighth in the poll. And that was after a 1-2 week last week. Like Peter said, this is a good team. I mean, they were excellent on offense last year. I don't really anticipate, when all is said and done this season, that they're going to take a massive step back. It's a group that has a lot of, potency. Chris Arroyo, Henry Ford, guys who we view as potentially top end draft prospects for this year, who haven't really gotten going yet. And once that happens, we still obviously do view this team as one that can make a lot of noise. When a team doesn't make noise, when a team has a tough week, and especially early in the season, I think one thing that would be good to give people an understanding on is what our system of punishment is, what we'll call it, is for teams that have really rough weeks. And so, for example, that was number 10 Duke in week one, only won 1 of 3 against Cincinnati. We dropped them from number 10 to number 18. This past week, NC State goes 0-4. They were number 14 in the country. We slipped them down to number 22. So an equal drop for both teams after tough weeks. There was a lot of argument, in the aftermath of us posting the top 25. The two biggest things in terms of what fans thought. One was, where was Oklahoma? And we've explained kind of what led to us not including Oklahoma. And the second was, why is NC State still ranked? So I want to get into that with you, Peter. What led us to that decision? I kind of just touched on it a little bit with it being so early in the season, and we talked about that, a couple minutes ago, but flush out for us what led to NC State still being included at number 22.
I think it, just trying to be as consistent in our process as possible. I think what we went back to, at least when looking at NC State in the week that it had, was Duke last week, how they dropped 2 of 3 in rather convincing fashion to Cincinnati. They would have gotten swept if it wasn't for its extra inning win. And so it's like, how do you wait? Obviously 0-4 optically is way worse than 1-2. And it's like, how do you wait that kind of hodgepodge of teams down in Jacksonville? We harped on it earlier, but the Ohio State loss is the real stinger there. But they ran into Riley Quick on Saturday, and then Coastal Carolina is another team that's kind of floating around in that 30-35 range. So we dinged them pretty good. They went from 14-22. There was certainly discussion about dropping them entirely, and then I think also in harping on our process a little bit more, for better or worse, coming into this year, as evident by the PAC's preseason ranking of whatever it was, 13 or 14. It was a team that we felt really good about. And I don't think that, again, an 0-4 week is very discouraging, I think, for a lot of people on all fronts. But 4 games doesn't really drastically change how I feel about NC State. I think once it, ironically enough, because so many years, we talk about NC State's offense being its biggest strength, and they've got a handful of guys who I know we like offensively. But for me, at least, it's that it's the pitching staff, particularly its bullpen. And so I think once its bullpen can get ironed out, Jacob Duden has had a rough go of it through 3 appearances, struggling to find the zone. Derek Smith is on the shelf with an injury. It's unknown when he's going to come back. The rotation has actually thrown the ball well with Dom Fritton, Heath Andrews, who's been kind of a revelation, I was impressed with him over the summer, and Ryan Marone. So, I mean, those are three guys you can feel confident in. And then once that bullpen gets straightened out, you're looking at one of the more dynamic duos in the country. And then the offense, they're still kind of in the process of, you know, figuring out what that best nine is, where everyone fits in the order, what spots to put guys in. It's something that a lot of teams are going through. So, I mean, again, 0-4 week, they're going to get dinged and punished for it. But they're not a non-top 25 team, at least just yet.
And that is exactly how I was going to put it. We look at it this way. We had NC State number 16 in our preseason poll. NC State then handily swept Fordham in opening weekend. I believe they outscored Fordham 33-9 or something like that over the course of opening weekend. We moved NC State from 16 to 14, and then NC State had a bad week in the second week of the season. It's hard for me to justify, if this is what was going to happen, taking a team that went from 16 to 14, and then after one very early season bad week saying, that's not one of the best 25 teams in the country. Are they the 14th best team in the country after last week? Certainly not. You can't get swept. And you can't, like, the Ohio State loss, like Peter said, is a really bad loss. And the others were very discouraging. They didn't win a single game throughout the week. That's bad. Nobody's trying to make an argument otherwise. That being said, though, it's hard for me to say that NC State is not a top 25 team. And so 22 felt appropriate to us. There are a lot of reasonable arguments out there that they could have been dropped out. I don't think anybody is wrong for saying that they shouldn't be ranked. I didn't think anybody was wrong the previous week after saying Duke shouldn't be ranked. But as we've laid out on this podcast, we're talking about a fraction of the percentage of the season, and making grand takeaways from that teeny tiny sample size this early, at least, doesn't feel appropriate to us. And so we had a calculated step back at this stage in the season when it's so early and there's so much to prove, and we're still relying a little bit, at least, on what we think of a team, just generally speaking from earlier, before the season even got started. There was in our mind no justification for dropping NC State out of the rankings.
Yeah, not to keep ranting here, but I mean, they had a bad inning on Tuesday against Liberty. They ran into Riley Quick on Saturday. They entered the week as the 14th best team. Four games is not going to, at least for me, four games is not going to have a team go from the 14th, a team that we viewed as the 14th best team in the country, to not one of the best 25. Now, if they keep losing, if they, you know, lay an egg against Canisius,
of course,
or Richmond, yeah, then yeah, we'll drop them as we see fit, but we're not going to change our rationale that drastically just on one dud week.
And I also think that, just to kind of tie everything that we've talked about in this podcast together, that is an applicable train of thought to the Oklahoma Alabama situation. It's just so early. And so could we have ranked Oklahoma? Yes. In the exact same way that we could have dropped NC State out of the rankings and been completely justified to do so. At the same time, it's so early and things are so fluid, and you also don't want to jump to these grand conclusions after a very small sample of games, that these are the results that we came to. And in the same way that Oklahoma has a chance to move way up into the rankings with a good week this week, NC State stands to move out of the rankings this week with a bad week. But what we didn't want is a situation where we drop NC State out, they sweep this upcoming week that they have, and then we're back in the situation of like, do we need to put NC State back into the rankings? Because we thought of them as highly as 16 and 14, and now they're unranked. That becomes messy. And so for us, the best way forward at this stage in the season was to do exactly what we did. We ranked Alabama. We have Oklahoma basically the first team out, and we left NC State in the rankings for the time being. Week three, which is now you're starting to get into a little bit more decent of a sample size of total games on the year, will have its own impact and different weights that will come with it. But that was the thinking up until this point.
Yeah, I think the overarching theme there is just it's early. Like, everything's going to take care of itself. You know, if NC State's not a top 25 team, they'll play their way out of it. Teams on the outside, if they are top 25 teams, they'll play their way into it.
Let's use that as the segue to discuss teams not named Oklahoma. We have shared already plenty of times that the Sooners are right there for a ranking. Is there one team, Peter, that you're looking at right now besides the Sooners who is going to have an opportunity to kind of make a case for itself this week to get into the rankings?
Yeah, it's a team I had circled even going into last week, and we brought him up in our call as a team for that 25 spot or just to be ranked in general. And it's Southern Miss. It's 7-1. It's off to a really, really impressive start. Won a series against a quality Louisiana Tech team over the weekend, shut out a top 15 team in Mississippi State and in-state rival on Tuesday. That's an awesome, and I think one of the more overlooked rivalries in college baseball, not to go off on a tangent here, but the environment at Pete Taylor Park whenever, just in general, but especially when, you know, Mississippi State or Ole Miss comes to town is really, really cool. Those fans are, and that fan base is just outstanding. But, 7-1, they're doing it on the strength of its pitching staff. The pitching staff has been lights out. I mean, it's got a 2.45 ERA through, what, 8 games, 85 strikeouts as a team through 73 innings. JB Middleton has finally, I would say, come into his own on the mound. He had been a serious helium, not necessarily helium guy, but he had generated serious buzz since his freshman fall as, you know, this live-armed kid with big stuff, but strikes are an issue, commanding the stuff. But this year, it looks like at least through two starts, it's starting to finally come together. Through 11 innings, he's yet to allow an earned run. Lefty Cross Sively in his transition to the rotation has also been excellent. Like, it's two very different looks with Middleton and Sively. Middleton's has thunderous stuff. Sively is this soft tossing lefty who just has a knack for staying off the barrel. So, I mean, I liked him heading into last week. I like him even more now. I think that, again, not only this week, but going forward, they're going to be a team I'm watching very closely. And they've got an awesome opportunity, I'd say, to really, iron out and strengthen its resume and make some serious noise, because later this evening, they've got an away game against Ole Miss, a game I know that they'll be up for. And then a series against number 24 TCU this weekend, which if they're able to win that on the heels of a midweek win against Ole Miss, I mean, that's, you're talking about a team that's in a really good spot. So I've got them circled. I mean, their pitching staff's going to keep them in all four games, I think. It's just a matter of if they hit enough.
And I would say that, you know, one of the things that was produced by our most recent top 25 call on Sunday, if Oklahoma is team 26, Southern Miss is team 27. I mean, we're talking about the two closest teams right now to the rankings. I'll give you guys a team that is a little further away than, 26 and 27. I mean, if we're only going to bump two teams into the rankings with good weeks, we've just talked about them in Oklahoma and Southern Miss. But the University of Kansas is looking mighty competitive to start its season. It's hard to take too much away from the teams that they've played. Texas A&M, Corpus Christi for 4 games in week 1, and Tarleton State for 3 games in week 2. They're 7-0. Kansas as a staff has a 2.9 ERA. Some poor defense has contributed to some of those high run totals that they've surrendered to these somewhat subpar teams. But this is a really old, experienced roster. Lots of junior college talent throughout the team. That's a team that recruits far more on the older side. They basically view it as though they're giving themselves an advantage by having more mature, lower ceiling professional prospects on their roster who have much higher ceilings as college baseball players. And just in terms of like physical development, they have a lot of dudes who are ready to play and know how to do it at a high level. And they're showing that so far. And so more Kansas winning will only get them closer to the rankings again. Do I think that that's a team that's going to play its way into a ranked spot this week? No, probably not. They face Omaha for 4 games. They don't have a midweek. It's going to be hard to justify ranking a team like that over some of the other ones that we have in the conversation. But this is a Kansas team that's on fire. And by the time it does get into Big 12 play, it seems like, based on who they have in their non-con schedule, Omaha, then Milwaukee, then 2 midweek games at Minnesota, this is a team that could have very reasonably somewhere between 1 and 3 losses by the time it opens conference play on March 14th at home against Baylor. So an intriguing squad with a decent amount of talent, much older group, and one that, Peter and I view as kind of on the periphery, you know, one that could eventually play its way into the rankings. It's worth kind of keeping some eyeballs on at this point.
Yeah, I'm happy you brought up Kansas. Coach Fitzgerald's done an excellent job. Has seen a year-over-year win increase during his tenure at the helm. They haven't made a regional since 2014. I'd say that this is, you know, they certainly have a chance to do so this year, and they're off to as good a start as you could have hoped, 7-0. And I'm happy you hit on that last point, is they have a rather forgiving, I would say, schedule that lies ahead in the lead up to conference play in a couple of weeks. I mean, you know, they could realistically be sitting here at, you know, 14-2, 15-3, something like that. You know, that type of upside heading into the first week in a conference play in a couple of weeks against Baylor. So definitely a team to watch closely.
Well, that is going to do it for the top 25 things to look forward to team-wise portion of our podcast. And with that, we enter what has become my favorite podcast segment of the week. It is time for Picks to Click. For those of you who are listening to the podcast for the first time, Picks to Click is very simple. Peter and I, with no prior discussion, so we have no idea who the other person is going to pick, will name one player a week who we think is in for a big performance. Whoever has the more standout outing or outings, if they're a hitter, over the course of a weekend, will win for either Peter and I a point. I took week one. I had Jason Wrights from Oregon. He struck out, I believe, 5 batters in 3 scoreless innings, and that got me the win over Peter's Chris Arroyo pick. And then last week, boom, Peter has evened the score. I picked Justin Mitrovic over at Elon. He picked Aiden Canock at Clemson. Canock was the far better pitcher, in my opinion, last week. So we're all evened up heading into week 3. And without further ado, Peter, your week 3 pick to click, talk to me about him.
All right. Not to beat a dead horse here, but my pick to click is Oklahoma infielder Jackson Willits, switch hitter, off to a, I'd say, fine start, solid start, 2 homers in 6 games, hitting a rather modest .250 right now. Be a really impressive freshman year, hitting in the top third of the lineup as a sophomore and kind of ready to take on a bigger role and kind of lead that offense a little bit. He had 10 homers as a freshman. It's kind of an intriguing hit power blend, I think, you know, just on his ability alone and tools alone. And you combine that with the fact that, you know, Oklahoma's got a pair of midweek games against Texas Southern and a weekend series against Cal State Northridge. I think he's primed for a little bit of a breakout week.
Well, I'm going to stick with an SEC batter here. So we have SEC against SEC, and I'm going to go with the guy who was selected by the SEC as its freshman of the week. I just wrote a story about him over at baseballamerica.com. So head on over there to check out the production of freshman hitters. I'm going with Brendan Lawson, the first baseman at the University of Florida, left-handed swinger. He was the top draft prospect in Canada in 2024 on our rankings. And he was purely fantastic this week against Dayton. He went, just doing the math quickly, 5-for-10 against Dayton. He hit his first career home run. It was a grand slam. He also doubled throughout the weekend and finished with 8 total RBIs. That is a guy who is extremely intriguing to me. Kind of a unique look at the plate with this high handset, short stride, but a lot of pop. Great hand speed, gets the bat to the ball quickly. Florida has become very bullish on him. He makes great swing decisions and a ton of contact on pitches in the zone, especially for a first-year player. And I think that he is going to have another standout week. So it's going to be Willits versus Brendan Lawson in week 3 for Picks to Click.
I like it. Good pick. I mean, you hit the nail on the head with Lawson. Unique look, ultra-high handset, but at least so far he's consistently getting in a good position to hit. And the results have followed. So I like it. I like we're going position player for position player this week.
I think a new rule for this game, and we're just going to make this rule in front of the people, is going to be that Peter and I are going to pick hitters and pitchers alternating every week just to kind of keep things uniform. So last week we did pitchers. This week is hitters. And next week we will flip back to the mound just to keep it organized. So a new rule has been invented for picks to click. But for those of you who need a reminder, heading into the third week, it's 1-1. I won week one. Peter took the win in this most recent week. And Peter, I'm going to throw it over to you one last time. Any final thoughts as we head into week three, the second full week of the college baseball season?
I think we hit on everything. Another exciting week on tap. We talked about the slate a little bit, a handful of teams that we're watching closely, players we're looking at. So, I mean, it's sure to be another action-packed five or so days here, and we'll reconvene in a week and do the same thing again.
I'm going to give my final thought. Ready for this? Peter's going to love it. Tyler Bremner is a great pitcher. He hasn't really been able to do a whole bunch this season, only three innings so far. But there's another pitcher on that UCSB staff that if you're a baseball fan, it's time to start watching. Righty Jackson Flora, the sophomore Saturday starter for the Gauchos, is fantastic. He was up to 99 this past week. He's thrown a couple breaking balls in that 27 to 2800 mile per hour. That would be crazy. RPM range.
Hard to hit.
Yeah, really hard to hit, but he's still throwing pitches that are hard to hit. It's a great sweeping slider, super intriguing, big life fastball. And this is a guy who's looking all the parts of a 2026 first round pick. Andrew Checketh, the head coach over there, continues to do a fantastic job with pitcher identification and development. And heading into week three, that is my guy that people should be keeping an eye on. But I can't pick him because hitters are picks to click this week. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. Again, if you're looking for more of the written word, you can do that over at baseballamerica.com/college. Peter and I are pumping out content over there pretty much every day. And that will continue here through week three, which should be a pretty exciting week. So for Peter Flaherty, my name is Jacob Rudner, and we will see you next time.